Hello and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. Oh, I'm glad you're with me. I'd get slapped with a diagnosis of myoclonic dystonia if you moved me with the idea that you missed today's show. Subtle steps to the ask. I invited Gail Perry back live after we rebroadcast her in March because I was reminded how much energy and simple smarts she has. For this show, she shares her strategies to prep your donors for successful solicitations. Gail's book is Fired Up Fundraising. We are calling in from her home in Raleigh, North Carolina, and we're on Facebook Live and Periscope too. Get to that in a second. On Tony's Take Two, Nonprofit Radio on Stanford Social Innovation Review. We're sponsored by Pursuant. Full-service fundraising, data-driven, and technology-enabled. You'll raise more money. Pursuant.com. And by WeBe Spelling. Super cool spelling bee fundraisers. WeBeSpelling.com. So today's show is on Periscope through me. I am at Tony Martinetti, and I'm turning to Periscope. If you want to join us on Periscope, check me out at Tony Martinetti. And we're also on Facebook Live. Gail Perry, that's the Fired Up fundraising page on Facebook, is over here on her phone. Hello, Facebook.
Hello, hello.
So join us for live video, either one,
Periscope
or Facebook Live. And I am really pleased, lots of things, to be in Gail Perry's home. She is an international fundraising consultant, keynote speaker, trainer, and philanthropy leader. She was a frontline fundraiser at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And over her 30 years, she has helped loads of organizations raise hundreds of millions of dollars. Her book is Fired Up Fundraising, Turn Board Passion into Action, published by Wiley. And you will find her at GailPerry.com. And she's also at GailPerryNC.
Gail Perry. I don't know
whether to say welcome or thank you for hosting me. Welcome back to
Nonprofit
Radio.
So glad. Tony is just such an expert, and he knows the fundraising business inside and outward. So it's so much fun to be talking shop with him today.
It's cool, and thank you for having me at your beautiful home in Raleigh.
Thanks so much.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about subtle steps to the ask. What do you see as the sort of the problem? Why is it worth
us talking for an hour about subtle steps to the ask?
Well, you know, the ask is sort of the moment of truth for fundraisers. And people bungle ask, I think, more often than they make them successfully.
Okay.
And lots of times, I don't know if you've ever been asked for a gift and it felt like an affront. Like people just came out and blurted it out and you're going, whoa. You know, I have felt like that more than once.
I haven't gotten that, but I know it happens because I've talked to donors.
We do not want donors to feel like it's an affront.
You're at a different level of giving them.
Okay,
beautiful home in Raleigh. beautiful side street she's on. Oh my God, you're at a different
the
level.
The dogwoods and the azaleas are blooming.
Yes, azaleas are blooming right now.
So you're at a different level of giving.
Yeah.
I haven't reached my peak yet. I'm still on the uphill climb.
But it's still like asking is tough and it's awkward and it's done so poorly, and you're not going to be successful if you make your donor go bleh. You know, there are ways to tiptoe up to the donor, and you want to feel the donor out every step of the way to make sure you're spending the right time with the right person and that your donor is going down this pathway. There's literally a pathway to take your donor down, so that your donor gets to the point where they can say, I'd love to help you. How can I help you? Wouldn't that be wonderful?
That's wonderful.
The donor says, how can I help you? We have done a good job of cultivation.
So we're making some mistakes in the preparation. These are the subtle steps to the ask. Okay. You like to talk, before we get into your actual steps, you like to talk about getting
permission.
Yes.
Permission for the
to ask before we get into the steps.
Well, well, you should never surprise a donor with an ask. A donor needs to know the ask is coming. I mean, look, a lot of us have been invited to ask events. It's like a luncheon, you know, and somebody asks you to fill their table, and you think, oh, this is going to be nice. I'm interested in learning about this nonprofit, and you sit there and you are pitched to, like, with a hard ask, staring at the pledge card, and you're asked for like 10 minutes. Look at the pledge card. Think about what you can do, and it's not a good idea. It ticks off donors, I think, to be surprised with an ask.
That's the affront.
It's the affront. And also the larger donor, I believe that, if the donor is, you want to find out if the donor is really ready to discuss the asking with you or discuss the gift with you. And all these subtle steps are you gently put an idea on the table and you find out if the donor's interested. And then you're discussing the idea and then you ask certain questions and all of a sudden, bingo, there's your ask. So it's not like this question that happens out of the blue. And let me tell you a quick story.
I love stories.
Yeah.
Listeners love stories. Please do.
Well, you're from New York City. I was coaching a young woman who was raising money for a community college in Manhattan. And she had a great relationship with this alumni couple and very social. They're very happy. She loved hanging out with this couple. And she took them to lunch and she asked them for a gift to fund a scholarship. And they were stunned. They were stunned. They practically fell out of their chair. They were thinking they had a social relationship and that she was doing this for fun. And so my young friend missed some of the subtle steps to remind the donors that she is a fundraiser and that her job is really to match the donors up with their interest at the organization.
There was nothing subtle about that at all.
No,
it was
subtle.
It was a bat over the head. It was out of left field.
Total non sequitur and... People
And people just don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
And we don't want to make your donor fall out of the chair. You know, we don't want to do that.
Okay. So the first step, we have just a couple minutes before we take a first break. So, but we got a few minutes. So we want to make sure that the people are. That we're talking to, whether we call them prospects. I don't tend to like the prospects.
Prospects is an awkward
potential
term.
Donors,
potential donors.
Prospects sounds like, I don't know, it sounds a little
warlike almost.
It sounds very clinical.
Yeah.
Potential donors, if we can agree on that. So you want to make sure that your potential donors are qualified.
Yes.
First of all.
What's that about?
Let's talk about qualifying a potential donor or a prospect, to use some technical language that may not be couth. You qualify a donor and you do two things. You determine that they have the interest in your cause that can be developed and they have capacity to give. So qualifying your donors is a journey. You're always looking for cues. You can ask your donor, here's some questions to ask your donor to determine capacity. What do you do in your spare time? Tell me about your work. You know, ask the donor to tell you about their work and all of a sudden they say, I manage a hedge fund.
Right.
Or what do you do in your spare time? You know, I ski around the world, the Alps and the Rockies. Mm-hmm. You know, the donors will tell you these things, mm-hmm. and they are cues about a donor's financial capacity. And one of my friends is a fundraiser for a hospital, and she says, now that you're out of the hospital, do you plan to travel? And if the donor says, oh, yeah, we're going to go around a round-the-world cruise now that I'm well, she knows she has a prospect,
right.
At least with capacity. And if the donor says, no, we're driving the old RV down to Florida and we're going to camp out a little while, she knows that this person is not going to be a prospect for a major gift. So you want to determine capacity, and there are lots of different ways. I've written a lot on my blog, GailPerry.com, about screening and doing research on prospects to find out capacity.
Okay.
So this is just one topic.
Right, and we're going to come back to back to capacity because I have more questions to ask.
I have questions to ask you about.
Yeah.
That was an organic way, the donor telling you.
Yeah.
Let's see if there are other ways, and then, of course, we have the other part of that.
Which is the interest.
Yeah.
So we're going to go away for our first break right now. And then when we come back, of course, Gail and I are going to keep talking. We're live on Facebook at the Fired Up Fundraising page. And we are live on Periscope at Tony Martinetti. Stay with us.
You're tuned to Nonprofit Radio. Tony Martinetti also hosts a podcast for the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Fundraising Fundamentals is a quick 10-minute burst of fundraising insights published once a month. Tony's guests are expert in crowdfunding, mobile giving, event fundraising, direct mail, and donor cultivation. Really, all the fundraising issues that make you wonder, am I doing this right? Is there a better way? There is. Find the Fundraising Fundamentals archive at TonyMartinetti.com. That's MarTigNetti. Remember, there's a G before the N. Thousands of listeners have subscribed on iTunes. You can also learn more at the Chronicle website, philanthropy.com. Fundraising Fundamentals, the better way.
Welcome back to Big Nonprofit Ideas for the Other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. We're in Gail Perry's home, Raleigh, North Carolina. We've got to do live listener love. It's time. We got multiple channels live. We're not only streaming live. We got St. Louis, Missouri with us. Tampa, Florida. Hello, live listener love to you, St. Louis and Tampa. We've also got Woodbridge, New Jersey, listening live to the live stream. We've got Ireland, and then we've got something called UK. So I don't know if that's also Ireland, or it could be England or Wales. We don't know. But Ireland, live listener love to you.
Yeah, Maria and Semple is on with us on Facebook Live. Hey, Maria.
Maria Semple, cool.
Good to see
live
you.
Listener love to Maria Semple.
Yeah.
We've also got somewhere United States, somewhere besides St. Louis and Tampa. And, Woodbridge, that could be Maria Semple.
So, live
listener love to everybody who's
listening live
right now via the podcast. That's the podcast. Podcast pleasantries for those of you who are going to catch this on the podcast when it comes, when you listen on your own schedule. Over 12,000 people now listening live through iTunes, Stitcher, Podbay, Player, other smaller
podcast
platforms. So pleasantries to the podcast listeners. And of course, you got to remember the affiliate affections, because we have AM and FM station listeners throughout the country.
Hello, AM and FM stations throughout the country.
Thank you. Affections to our AM and FM listeners, whatever
time of day and
whatever day your station fits Nonprofit Radio into your schedule, into its schedule.
I'm glad you're with us.
Let them know you're listening on that station.
And this is the nonprofitradio.com with Tony Martinetti and Gail Perry, in case you're joining late.
Just in case you joined us on Periscope or Facebook Live late,
this is Nonprofit Radio.
We're talking about the subtle steps to the ask.
Yes.
And we are in Gail Perry's home in Raleigh. Okay. So we were talking about the first step is making sure that we have a qualified potential donor that we're talking to.
And you gave the example of,
as I said, you know, it's organic. The person says what their vacation is going to be like. Suppose it doesn't come that easily to us. We don't have the opportunity to be meeting the person. What about research? What about other people who may be able to help us? How else could we? How else can we
determine capacity?
Yes. Well, if you're trying to get ready to ask a donor, of course, what we're trying to do is figure out if they're qualified, and we want to determine interest level and capacity to give. So when you're looking at capacity, prospect research online is a goldmine. And you can simply Google your donor or go to LinkedIn. LinkedIn is a really interesting source because you can find out who's connected to this donor, and sometimes you can find out board members have connections to donors.
Mm-hmm.
So online resources, and Maria Semple is with us, and she's the online prospect research guru herself.
Yes, you'll find Maria at the Prospect Finder. Got to give her a shout out because she's our prospect research contributor. She's on every month.
Oh, she's fabulous.
And she's also a very big proponent of using LinkedIn for research.
Yeah. And then there are other sources. Frankly, my favorite way to qualify a prospect is to ask around about the prospect. I like to do something called screening sessions, and I just wrote a blog about screening sessions a couple of weeks ago. The Agitator blog picked it up. Yay!
Agitator is cool. Roger Craver was just on last week.
Talking
about donor retention.
So Roger praised my screening sessions blog. I thought I've died and gone to heaven. I'd reached the pinnacle. I might as well retire tomorrow.
He's got some very, very clear opinions about what's appropriate and what's kind of BS in nonprofits, yes.
But a screening session is when you have a short list of donors and you go down each name and you discuss these names or potential donors or prospects with another person or with a small group of people. And it's a delicate conversation because some people are not comfortable talking about this, but
you're outing your friends, basically.
Well, I don't know. I usually people who are donors to an organization and they're leaders at the organization, they know other major donors, they want to help you bring these people in. And right, it's so like fundraising strategy.
So generally willing to help.
Well, yeah. You want to find out. Okay. And also, I have a friend I'm coaching in major gifts right now, and she said that she's been instructed to call a donor and say, would you please engage in a priority prospect review with me? And that sounds intimidating. But instead, if you said, would you mind brainstorming about some potential donors with me? That is a different way, and you get a different response. So I do think that a lot of how we are about our work makes a big difference about how what kind of reaction we get. If we're very formal and like, ooh, this is awkward, people are going to be formal and awkward back. But if we're casual, like you're casual today, we're casual about fundraising, it's easy, it's doable, people will feel like it's not so intimidating too. Right, Tony?
I agree.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so this is a good method. Thank you.
These are ways to determine a prospect's capacity.
I have to say, there is the weather is so beautiful here
that Gail had her
doors wide open when I came in, and there's now a fly in the house. It's the size of a helicopter. It's buzzing right. It just came right between us before. Gail has a fly swatter. I don't know if she's going to activate it online, but
it's a prop.
If you hear a helicopter in the background or an osprey, that's the fly. That's the fly. Okay.
What interest are we trying to gauge? Well, we're trying to gauge prospects' interest in our organization.
Just generally, before we get to a specific program.
Do you like us?
Are you interested in what we do?
Well, these are questions to ask. It's always nice to have questions to ask if you're a fundraiser. Ask, how did you come to be a donor? I'd love to hear your story.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start talking about it, and you go, tell me more. Gosh, that's fascinating. What happened next? You know, so you're drawing out from the donor their story.
Yeah, great open-ended question.
You know, and look, you may have a social service. Somebody, I was doing a webinar on this topic yesterday, and somebody said, well, we're not a hospital or a university. We are a battered women's shelter. How can we ask the donor? And this is what you say to a donor then. How did you come to be a donor to us? Tell me about your interest in domestic violence. You know, and the person can reveal what they want to reveal. I mean, I've never been in a battered situation, but I have a deep love and a break in my heart for women who go through that, and I want to give to this cause because I believe in it. But fundraisers have never asked me why I care about it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we make a big mistake as fundraisers because donors have a story and they have a passion and they want to share it with people, but fundraisers never ask. So if you want to determine if your prospect's interested or if you want to grow their interest, get them to tell you their story about how they are connected to your organization.
I have to stop there. Yeah. I got to give a shout out to next week's guest.
Yeah.
On Nonprofit Radio.
It's going to be Claire Meyerhoff.
Oh, Claire. She's great.
She and I are going to be live in the studio next Friday, and we're talking about donor stories. She's got strategies for
getting the fine points, getting the details, and not long, but getting those really cool details that make a story very special, a donor story really special. So we're going to be talking about that next week with
Claire Meyerhoff is our Fired Up Fundraising go-to prospect research guru, too, so she's done a lot of webinars with us. Look, Tony Luna has just said hello. Hey, Tony.
Hello.
He's with the Pearl S. Buck Foundation.
Cool.
Really wonderful, wonderful organization. I'm sponsoring a child with Pearl Buck Foundation.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
What brought you to the Pearl Buck Foundation?
Well, they engaged me for a board retreat and then for some consulting, and they showed me these pictures. Literally, you can look at a kid and choose to sponsor them. You see their story. And for $30 a month, you can sponsor them. And Tony Luna was on a webinar.
Oh, I'm sorry. I called him Luna.
Luna.
I'm sorry.
Tony
Luna. You're saying Tony
Luna just joined.
Tony
Luna just joined.
But listen,
sorry, Tony. I'm sorry.
We were doing it.
Who's saying Luna just joined? From the Pearl Buck Foundation. Okay.
But we were doing a webinar on donor stories, and I unmuted Tony, and he told us a story, and it made me cry. And I went to his website, and I was familiar enough with their work and respected it, and so I'd already been warmed up, so to speak, made the commitment. Right, Tony? I can't see your comments, but anyway. But thanks for joining. Okay. You're an amazing fundraiser.
Every donor has a story.
Every donor has a story. So if you're trying to qualify your donor, interest and capacity. You know, and the donor's story is one way to find out their interest, and you can ask them also, what else do they give money to, or what are their philanthropic priorities?
It could be volunteering.
Yeah.
What else in the community moves you.
Right. What other projects and causes are you involved in? Yeah. That's huge information. And, you know, sometimes you can say, what are your top three philanthropic priorities? And donors have those priorities. They have them all laid out. They got a vision about what they want to accomplish in the world, and fundraisers out there completely in the dark.
Yeah. You're suggesting a lot of asking.
The
other half of that is a lot of listening.
Totally.
Without interfering, without pushing what
you think the donor may be interested in or what the latest program is that desperately needs funding.
Yeah.
If that's not where the donor is going, the potential donor is going, don't steer them.
Right? Yeah.
It's just simple listening, right?
And we think we got to have this presentation. We have to have the four-color brochure. We have to have the fact sheet and the this and the that and the PowerPoint. And we think we're supposed to go in and, like, sell the donor on something. But that's not the way to get money from a donor and get investment. No, you shut up and you ask questions and you listen your way to the gift. Listen your way to the gift. Yeah.
Have you ever used that?
Listen your way to the gift.
Have you used that as a seminar topic? Listen your way to the gift.
Yeah.
Okay. I like it. Okay.
And I have a newsletter. I post every Friday on my blog, and I just posted my blog post this morning was about listening your way to the gift and how to get an appointment with a major donor. Is to ask them for advice and let them know they get to do the talking.
I see. So that was not so very subtle
promo
of today's blog post.
Plug for the blog.
We're talking about subtle steps to the ask, but not subtle promotion.
Right. Well, you know, this is a reference tool.
Very good.
It's a resource.
A resource.
Right. Plus, you don't have to be subtle about promoting your excellent work.
Okay.
You did mention getting others involved.
Yeah.
Others who may be able to tell you about people and their willingness to do it.
Yeah.
Now,
you're a former dancer.
Yeah.
Right? Now, were you modern or classical?
Classical, and I moved to modern.
And you did?
Moved to modern, yeah.
Do you do a lot of work with arts groups?
I do. I have an arts background.
I know you have an arts background.
Yeah.
But you do a lot of work with arts
I
groups.
I do, and I'm very active in the arts. I'm on the Raleigh City Arts Commission here, and I'm attending a lot of arts performances all over.
And what's going to happen to the Raleigh City Arts Commission when you move to Chapel Hill?
I'm sure they will. I'll have to resign.
They're not going to like that.
Sure that they are going to find another person that people in line politically try to get on that board. So,
do you find small arts groups have trouble
identifying? We're talking about subtle steps to the ask.
Terrible trouble.
Identifying, having a decent prospect pipeline.
Well, I think, small art and arts groups are usually so seat of the pants, and so
they're trying to keep the lights on.
Yeah,
the theater rent paid.
And you know, I love the Burning Coal Theater. Is one of my favorites. We're subscribers there and donors in Raleigh, and they have a very skeleton staff, and they really only have an artistic director, and they don't have the infrastructure to have a real fundraising office, and it shows.
Yeah.
No.
So, all right. So, what does a small group like that do? Whether they're arts or social service, or
if I were them, I would get a grant
to
fund an infrastructure capacity building grant from some of these sources around Raleigh who would like to see them grow.
Okay,
but our audience goes way beyond Raleigh.
Right. Anybody?
So you're looking for foundations that will make capacity.
Yeah,
building grants.
Capacity building is huge, and you should make a big case for it because a lot of donors will give to that if they know you've got a strong program that's well received in the community, and you don't have a staff to do marketing and fundraising and solicitations. I mean, you got to have that kind of infrastructure, or either get volunteers to do it.
Yeah,
otherwise you're never going to get to the next level.
Right.
If I could,
nonprofits, you know, you got this $1, and what do you do with it? You know, do you spend it on your program? You're feeding hungry children. You're putting on amazing performances. You got your program area, or do you invest it in infrastructure? What do you do with that dollar? And everybody wants to put it in program, but if you don't invest in infrastructure, you will never grow.
Yeah.
Never grow. It's a dilemma.
I know. That's why the vast majority of nonprofits never break, I think, $75,000
in annual revenue or something.
That's right.
Something like 70% are under $75,000 in revenue.
Very difficult. Yeah.
All right. But we're trying to help you out. So
tips for building your potential donor pipeline.
You need to activate your board. We haven't even talked about the board yet as being a potential referral source.
Absolutely.
For people who may be interested, and then we qualify them as we need to.
But here's the problem. People go to the board members and they say, give us 10 names so we can send solicitation letters to them. And the board member's going, what?
Yeah,
I don't want to hit up my friends. And we approach, you know, just like we were approaching donors wrong, we're approaching board members wrong. Instead, And you're going to hear more. You heard from Roger Craver, what, last week?
Last week, donor retention.
If you get board members to just make thank you phone calls and thank you notes and maybe host tours for donors and have parties for donors, you will raise more money, period.
Yeah, and that's a great way to not be off-putting to board members.
That's right.
Who are not comfortable. Look, some will be willing to sit down, and I'll sit across from her desk, and I'll ask her for a $50,000 gift. I'm happy to do it because I love the organization, and I'm comfortable soliciting for you.
Yeah.
Others need to be more subdued or not so frontline about their fundraising. But there's a lot they can do in fundraising.
There's a lot they can do in fundraising.
Bring a network. Not for immediate solicitation, but bring friends.
Open doors.
Events, open doors.
Executive director said to me over and over, they said, if I could just get my board members to open doors, that's all I need them to do is open doors. And so can I tell you my porch party story?
I
never say no to a story.
Okay.
It's a Raleigh
story.
This porch right out here that
Yeah, man, the front porch. Yeah, man.
Across the threshold and down.
Yeah,
of course.
So look, I was a board member of the Carolina Ballet. And we had a new artistic director who came down from Philadelphia, Ricky Weiss. And as a board member, I wanted to open some doors and connect the ballet, especially Ricky, with some key players in the community. So I had a porch party. And it's so interesting. I invited 60 people. It's all by email. And I deliberately invited people that I thought could be helpful to the ballet. You know, very strategic. And my porch has a good reputation for parties. So people like to come to Gail's house for whatever. And of the 60 people that I invited, 30 came and 30 did not come. So it was like the people who came self-selected that they were interested. Mm-hmm. And the people who were not interested did not come. So from a board member standpoint, your board member's not trying to arm twist people. The people that they invite can either come or not. So it's not so scary for board members. So when we had a porch party and I put on my fundraising hat, and I said to the fundraising staff, I said, these are the top three people on my porch. He's your guy. He's a venture capitalist, and his daughter's a ballet dancer. He's your guy.
Oh, that's great. Yep.
And so I knew what to do for the staff. And so they were like helicopter fundraisers, you know, how you're gently circling, and then you gently glide in when there's an opportunity. And he was like, he was really glad to meet them. Really glad to meet Ricky. Really glad to get involved. He became chair of the board, and I frankly think he kept the ballet alive for a few years. So it all happened on my porch because I just opened the door. So I like to tell board members that story, you know, because it doesn't have to be so scary.
Yeah,
you don't have to like write 10 names down and give it to people.
We just have about a minute before
next break.
Yeah.
I got to do a little business, but so let's just tease the idea of your next
subtle step, which is hot button.
Yes.
Just give us an overview of that. What are we
talking
about?
Well, once your donor is qualified for interest and capacity, your next step is to find out what their hot buttons are. So you want to know their area of interest at your organization.
Okay.
And that's a fun conversation.
All right.
We're going to probe that, the hot buttons in just a couple minutes. I have to do a little business. So there's a lot more on the subtle steps to the ask coming up. You know them, sponsors of the show. Their latest free content paper is still fresh and very relevant. It is The Intelligent Fundraiser's Guide to Sustaining Giving. Research proves that there is cause and effect between sustaining giving and donor retention. I can't put it any simpler. Sustained and retained. Sustained and retained. This paper will help you learn the right way to start your sustaining giving program or expand it. Doesn't matter where you are, you can learn something from this. It's at pursuant.com. You click resources, then content papers. It's The Intelligent Fundraiser's Guide to Sustaining Giving. Don't make me read it to you. I don't want to spend an hour on nonprofit radio reading. Get it. We Be spelling bees for millennial fundraising. No algebra with natural logs this week. That was last week's show. Today, just reminding you about this fun, cool fundraising night with a spelling bee, a concert, stand-up comedy, live music, dancing, all around fundraising at a local, typically there are like bars and restaurants. But these things are smashes for millennial events, millennial fundraising. So you check out their video at weBeeSpelling.com. Very cool idea. Now time for Tony's Take Two. Nonprofit Radio is now part of Stanford Social Innovation Review. I announced that last week, and I'm saying it again because it's my show, and I do what I need to do. I do whatever the hell I need to do. Twice on Stanford Social Innovation Review, because this is really exciting to be on such a premier platform as SSIR, right? You know them, right?
Very big deal.
Thank you.
Very
Sarah.
Big deal. I have never made it to Stanford Social Innovation Review, so you're with the big kahuna here.
Well, you've been personally solicited for a gift, and I have not yet. So check it out. Of course, there's a video introducing this whole thing, as there was last week. There's always a video. You know me.
You know
this. There's always going to be a video. I look fat, actually, in the video. I look a little fat.
He's very thin.
But check out the video. You'll see what I'm talking about. It is at TonyMartinetti.com, and that is Tony's Take Two. Let's go. Okay, let's continue. Well, let's remind people. We're on Facebook Live. That's the Fired Up fundraising page, Facebook Live. That's where you'll find us there. And we're also on Periscope. The Periscope is over here on this screen. And that's at Tony Martinetti, my Periscope. So join us if you want to check out video. If you're accustomed to the live stream and you want to check out video, find us either of those two places. Okay. Let's go back to the subtle steps.
The hot button, the interest. Again, so how do we start to find out what really moves people about our work?
Well, that's a really fun conversation. First, the first step, of course, with the donor is to qualify them for interest and capacity.
Right.
And once you know that your donor is qualified, you know, what interests you most about our work? This is not hard to ask, you know. And the initial questions to determine interest and capacity, lots of times the donor will tell you what they're interested in most. But it's really interesting. If you think about, give me a typical nonprofit. What's your favorite nonprofit up in New York or somewhere?
Let's pick one that's
one of my small clients. A
historical society.
Yeah, okay. Historical society has got different legs to its case for support. It's got different areas that people might be interested in. There might be a downtown redevelopment interest because there are old houses or facilities downtown that they're working on.
That's possible. Not for this organization, but
okay.
Right, I guess.
It could be historical preservation overall, that a history aspect.
History and education.
And then there may be an education aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And then there may be a heritage aspect. Maybe there's a genealogy issue or a demographic, you know, African-American or Hispanic or Caucasian, you know, that you can trace down the lines. And then there may be maybe a furniture or a cultural civilization, maybe a sociology, the way people lived. Because I know that my mother was involved in a plantation historical society down in East North Carolina, and they had the furniture, and they had the African-American story, and they had the overall history of it was the Governor Stone of North Carolina.
Absolutely. Some of this rings true. The organization I'm thinking of is
ALBA, the Abraham Lincoln Brigade
Archives. Cool.
And they are memorializing
the group of men who went from the U.S. to fight in the Spanish Civil War
against the fascists.
Yeah. Ooh.
They were called the Abraham Lincoln Brigade.
Wow.
And this is the Abraham Lincoln Brigade archives.
Wow.
Kept alive by descendants of the brigade members.
Mm-hmm.
And some of this
rings
true in terms of genealogy.
Different aspects.
History, education.
Right.
Keeping alive the memory generally.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so your donor is going to choose, your donor's typically interested in one area versus the others. Or, you know, some donors are just interested in your financials. You know, how are you organizing yourself to make a difference?
That could be a hot button interest.
Yeah, your financials.
It might be a financially oriented person.
That's right.
Concerned about your balance sheet, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Or you know, like what's your business model, and how can I help you? You know, are you bringing enough money? And you know, because I think the business model sometimes is an interesting strategic discussion. So my point is, though, your donor's got different areas. Every organization has got a bunch of different areas that's going to interest a donor. And so when you say, what are you interested in at our organization? Tell me how you became a donor. Tell me about your experience with our organization. A hospital. Turns out they're interested in the maternity stuff. There's all this new stuff happening with maternity. My daughter just had a baby in Chapel Hill a few months ago. And
congratulations.
Oh, thank you. All this
Grandma.
New stuff. Oh, yeah,
Grandma.
I love it.
Yes. That's why you moved to Chapel
Hill. Yeah.
Close to the
grandkids. Oh, I can eat them. So, for example, if I were really interested in this new maternity stuff and I'm a grandmother, gosh, well, then I can meet the new maternity doctor. I can meet the midwife. I can find out stories about patients who've had the experience. And maybe I had a really frightening childbirth when I came along, and I have some, you know, lots of times donors have a personal past. Happened to them.
Brought them to the organization.
Happy, like I tried to be a ballet dancer that was happy, you know, or whatever. You know, they had a difficult, or somebody in their family did, but usually a donor has a deep connection, and if you can find that out. Mm-hmm. And so what you're trying to do is build upon your donor's interest, specific interest area.
There may also be clues in their past giving.
Uh-huh.
If they've designated their gifts to a certain program or programs,
right.
That's obviously a big hint of what moves them.
Right.
So you could ask, why, you know, I've seen that your gifts are consistently to this,
to the education component.
Yeah.
The education work we do, the outreach we do in elementary schools.
Yeah.
What is it about that work that moves you?
Totally.
Is there anything else that moves you? Again,
we are interviewing the question. We are interviewing the donor.
Lots of good listening.
We are not presenting. We're not presenting.
Right. Here's our newest program that has zero funding now because it's only 6 weeks old. We need you to be interested in this.
That is not the way to engage a major donor. And also, people need to realize, too, that major gifts are almost always designated for something. They're rarely unrestricted unless a donor really believes in unrestricted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I make my major gift someday in my life, I'm torn between making it unrestricted to my favorite place or making it for something special. I'm thinking about endowing, if I could.
Okay.
I would like to endow the president's position. So that would free up money. But I want the president to come talk to me every year and tell me what's going on. You know, but see, donors have conditions, too. And one, I'm talking a little bit on this subject at the AFP International Conference in San Francisco in a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And my colleague who's presenting with me, she says that one of the things that you need to do in the subtle steps, you need to serve donors outrageously. Like she says, she has cooked for donors. She's helped them get the right kind of hotel room. Her name is Ellie Jordfall. She's the senior director of major gifts at the Limeburger Cancer Center in Chapel Hill.
Okay.
And she's brilliant.
Serve your donors outrageously.
Outrageously. Yeah. And then somebody wrote in, we're giving webinars just yesterday, and she said, I'm just a one-person shop. How can I do that? This is making me feel overwhelmed. And so I said, pick one donor who has the interest and mega capacity and maybe make it your goal or get a board member to help you with it. You know, small organizations can use these same strategies. You just deal with fewer people. Don't sell yourself short because you're a small organization.
No, you have advantages. Because you can serve people personally, outrageously personally, that large organizations can't because their portfolios are so big and there are so many major donors. Yes, no. Small shops have a distinct advantage in this. The serving outrageously reminds me of a guest that I had on a few years ago, but I replay his show once a year. It's Peter Shankman, and his book is called Zombie Loyalists.
Zombie Loyalists, yeah. I like
how
that.
It's how to serve people so well, customer service-wise, that they are zombies to your organization, and they do your PR and your marketing and promotion for you.
Oh, that kind of zombie.
Through all the social channels.
Right.
And the book is more about corporate, but it's got great lessons for nonprofits, and we make the point, as I do lots of times, Peter and I do, that small shops have a distinct advantage in this. You are not shortchanged and under resourced in that respect in terms of how you can serve people.
I think small shops tend to hold themselves small and sell themselves short with their thinking. Oh, we can't do that. We're too small. And it's better to have a possibility thinking rather than we can't do that thinking.
Yeah,
don't
it's a scarcity,
scarcity mindset.
Yeah, that is it's negative. It's destructive.
Yeah.
Right.
Abundance.
Okay, let's go to your next step, which is creating some cultivation opportunities around what we now know are the hot buttons.
Yeah, so look, for once you've qualify your donor for interest and capacity. The next step is find out their hot buttons, and then the next step, create cultivation experiences for the donor around the area of interest. And again, this is all fun stuff. Right, it's not
it
hard.
It definitely should be.
It's not hard work for a donor to be for a fundraiser to be interviewing the donor, find out why they love you, mm-hmm. and then help them love you more by connecting them with interest. And let me just give some examples. All right, Tony Luna, I hope you're still listening. You know, I could have the opportunity to. I've been invited to write to the child I'm sponsoring in the Philippines, or to hear from his parents. I could, if I wanted to learn more about that area of interest. I think it's a little bit painful for me because I know I'm not so sure I want to have direct contact. But I'm really interested in some parts of the Pearl Buck Society work. You know, for a hospital. Again, I was talking about the maternity ward. You know, I'd be interested in the fundraiser would design a cultivation experience. A series of experiences
around the maternity,
around my interest,
the maternity experience,
you know, the ballet or the theater, you know, the ballet. I'm interested in the toe shoes. Well, gosh, they'll give me a signed pair of toe shoes. Oh, I got to frame them, you know, and I get to like watch the prima ballerina warm up. So, oh my gosh, she's so beautiful.
Right, you get to go inside. You come to rehearsal.
Yeah.
Maybe a little backstage tour after a show.
Yeah. Listen, let me. I gotta tell you, I'm a ballet fan, and the ballet staff. During the Nutcracker, they invited me and my daughters and me for a backstage tour during intermission. And there's the Sugar Plum Fairy warming up. I can still remember. I'm like, I'm about to weep over the beauty.
Once in a lifetime, right?
Yeah, and you know, that's a donor experience that brings your donor joy. And it's so much fun to do. And also, I want to make a point, a really important point, that donors, there's some studies, Penelope Burke's research says that donors enjoy meeting program heads. So, you know, you've got a nonprofit, you've got all these different people doing the work.
People don't think of that because you talk to the program officers every day.
Yeah.
They come to your staff meetings, you see them in the hallways, out in the field, it's no big deal.
Yeah.
But for a donor or a potential donor to be brought in to witness some of that work, that's a very, very special opportunity that a lot of people,
because it's our routine,
just take for granted
in
the office. Donors don't take that for granted. They love that stuff.
They love that stuff. And so, again, we're making fundraising fun. We're making fundraising easy. I call this the kinder, easier, gentler, and much more successful and much more fun way to raise money.
Don't make that your next book title.
No.
It'll take the first chapter to just get the title across. No, but stuff that you in your organization probably take for granted is going to be very, very interesting to
your potential donors.
Yeah.
I think of a nonprofit radio station. The hosts are in the studio every single day. It's no big deal. But for a donor or a potential donor to be brought in and see all the sparkling equipment and all the lights flashing and see how the host interacts with the producer, get a tour of the studio, that, you know, again, it's something insider that the people who work in that studio probably take for granted every single day. But your donors don't.
And years ago, it was Take Your Daughter to Work Day when I worked at Chapel Hill, and I took my daughter, and we got a little tour, and we went over to the WUNC radio in Swain Hall on campus, and there was Keith, what's his name, broadcasting, and so there's Keith, I hear him on the radio. And, you know, the thing about this kind of thing, I still remember long ago, the donor got a picture, got a visual, I'm talking about visual experiences that I had, and that is different from words. It's one thing for you as a fundraiser to try to tell your stories, and you can do a great job, but give your donor the experience. Then you don't have to do so much work. And the donor, somehow it imprints on the donor more than your story.
Oh, for sure. Oh, it's a live experience.
Live experience.
So much more vivid than a brochure or your
story about the work.
Or even a video.
Don't just tell your story about
the work. Go take them to do the work. Watch the work.
Yeah.
Can it be hands-on?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's something, I'm thinking of agriculture, but that's not the only example.
Yeah.
Is there something hands-on that they can actually participate in?
I believe in asking donors if they want to volunteer. Because studies show, there was a big study, a while back, that said that 84, I think maybe it's the Bank of America high net worth study that said that 84% of high net worth donors in their survey volunteered. And the ones that volunteered more than 100 hours a year gave almost $100,000 a year to their cause.
Mm-hmm.
So the more there's a direct correlation between the amount of time your volunteer spends with you and the gift they're going to give you.
It's real engagement.
It's real engagement.
All right. We've got to take a break.
Take a break.
Let's go out for a break. And when we come back, of course, Gail and I are going to wrap up with the subtle steps to the ask. Stay with us on Periscope. Stay with us on Facebook Live.
Like what you're hearing on Nonprofit Radio? Tony's got more. On YouTube, you'll find clips from his stand-up comedy, TV spots, and exclusive interviews. Catch guests like Seth Godin, Craig Newmark, the founder of Craigslist, Mark Echo of Echo Enterprises, Charles Best from DonorsChoose.org, Aria Finger of DoSomething.org, and Naomi Levine from New York University's Hyman Center on Philanthropy. Tony tweets, too. He finds the best content from the most knowledgeable and interesting people in and around nonprofits to share on his stream. If you have valuable info, he wants to retweet you. During the show, you can join the conversation on Twitter using hashtag Nonprofit Radio. Twitter is an easy way to reach Tony. He's at Tony Martinetti, MARTIGNETTI. Remember, there's a G before the N. He hosts a podcast for the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Fundraising Fundamentals is a short, monthly show devoted to getting you over your fundraising hurdles. Just like Nonprofit Radio, Tony talks to leading thinkers, experts, and cool people with great ideas. As one fan said, Tony picks their brains and I don't have to leave my office. Fundraising Fundamentals was recently dubbed the most helpful nonprofit podcast you have ever heard. You can also join the conversation on Facebook, where you can ask questions before or after the show. The guests are there too. Get insider show alerts by email. Tony tells you who's on each week and always includes links so that you can contact guests directly. To sign up, visit the Facebook page or TonyMartinetti.com.
Hi, this is Claire Meyerhoff from the Plan Giving Agency. If you have big dreams but a small budget, you have a home at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio.
Welcome back. And the irony of Gail talking over Claire Meyerhoff is that they were very good friends. She didn't realize her mic was hot, and there was this drop playing, but they're very good friends. Claire is back in North Carolina, right?
Yeah.
Or is she in Maryland? No,
she's back and forth.
Okay. So the irony is, Doug Novi, a very good friend, is bringing a drop for Nonprofit Radio.
Well, at least
and, of course, Claire will be on next week talking about donor stories, getting the fine details and how to craft that story. It doesn't have to be long to be genuine and heartfelt and to be a motivating donor story. And Claire's going to talk about that next Friday, Nonprofit Radio.
Totally.
Okay. Yes, and you endorse Claire.
Totally endorse Claire. She's our fired up fundraising go-to Plan Giving favorite person, and she's also a buddy of mine. We run around together here in Raleigh, as we say.
Okay, cool. She's going to miss you when you move to Chapel Hill.
I'm not going to be far.
Okay, let's spend a little more time with the these cultivation opportunities. Who else could participate, maybe?
Yeah.
If they're friends with another potential donor, if you do it as a small group.
Yeah.
If they know a board member.
Mm-hmm. Board members can be involved.
Can we get a CEO introduction? Can we get 5 minutes with the CEO?
Yeah.
Who else could be involved in anything?
When you start designing a cultivation plan, we do something called moves management, and we want to design moves, which is experiences for your donor step by step. And so you can be really creative in your moves. You know, you can invite them. Listen, if they don't come to the event, you still get credit for the introduction, right? Or for the invitation.
Sure.
You get it. And then you can arrange for them to meet your CEO. You can go up the ladder about different people they can meet. You can give them tours and conversations with the program staff about the area they're interested in. But the thing is that it's very important to keep, it's easy to get this to be too social. So you want to try to have meetings with donors rather than visits. This is the new terminology, meetings. Can we have a meeting?
That's a fancy new word.
Okay.
I've never heard that one. All right.
Well, drug and jail.
Ellie, she and I did this webinar yesterday that we're going to give in San Francisco, she has a slide about the old words and the new words.
Okay. There's the new word is meetings. We want a meeting with a donor.
As opposed to a visit. A visit is more social.
Yes.
A meeting is more, maybe a little bit more business-like, a little bit more transactional, because our job...
But is it wrong to say we'd love to have you come visit?
That's fine.
Visit our office.
That's fine.
Come to our station. Come to our.
We want to use visit, but the thing is that we don't want to make it seem too social.
Maybe we call it a visit, but then within the visit we have meetings.
We'll have a little meeting.
So there's a.
Let's have a meeting.
The umbrella visit. Oh, I'm using my downstage hand. The umbrella visit, and then within the visit, We have meetings with CEO, program staff, and I think as many people as possible.
Yeah.
And maybe these are not all formal meetings, but just like even just an interaction, just a hello. Oh, this is our CFO.
Yeah. But the thing,
please meet our new donor. You know,
if
it's just something brief.
But it comes to the point where you have to say to the donor, and this Ellie says this is even in the qualification stage. Would you? And this is the key question to pop. Would you like to know more about how you could impact this project area?
Oh, but that's the actual ask.
Well, that's the beginning of the ask. That's the beginning of the ask conversation.
It's the end of the beginning of the steps, but now we're in the beginning
of the ask conversation.
The ask
conversation.
Okay.
Would you? And see, this is like how you ask for permission. You know, would you like to know more about how you could impact the toe shoes for the ballerinas, or would you like to know more about how you could help the historical society with them?
There doesn't have to be structure to this visit.
No,
right. That's what you're saying. I mean, when you're calling the meeting, in other words, there's got to be structure to it.
Yeah,
and a purpose.
Not just a purpose.
Not just social. Right.
Yeah.
Now.
Does this ask necessarily happen at the visit?
It depends on what the donor says.
Maybe not, right?
The donor might say, oh, my gosh, I've been waiting for you to ask me this question for a long time. I really want to help. Some donors will say that. Some donors will literally say to you, why haven't you asked?
Yeah, I know those stories. Yes,
you know, and other donors are just you're having to educate your donor about they have this burning interest, they have capacity, and now you're saying to them, would you like to know more about how you could help? So if you can't be a fundraiser without getting that out of your mouth.
Right.
You have to say it. And then the donor says, yeah, I'd like to know more. And then you could say, well, if you did to choose ever to invest in us or make a gift, you could do this or this. Is this the kind of thing you might like to explore? So that way, these are subtle steps, these little tiny questions.
Is that something you'd like to explore?
Is that something?
Yeah, I'd like to know a little more. All right,
yeah.
Well, let us come back to you with some potential impact?
It's something you'd like to explore, and then, I wouldn't come back to them. I would try to find out more right there on the spot. Would you like to look at the cardiac center or the maternity ward, for example? Or would you like to meet Ricky, our ballet artistic director, and hear from him?
Those are the hot buttons.
Well, we don't know. Maybe not. But if you say to the donor, would you like to know more about how I could support this project? That's a specific area of interest.
Yeah, this program that we
and
just
then you say, what else would you like some options of what you could fund? Would you like to learn more? Would you like to meet someone? Andrea Kilstedt, my friend in New York City, has a story about this
and
guy.
Andrea's been on the show.
Yeah,
she was with the Ask.
The Ark of the Ask. I love that.
Ark of the Ask.
But the Brooklyn, I think it was a film group in Brooklyn that she's very involved with. But the guy came in, he said, "Yeah, I'd like to support y'all. What can I do?" And so they created three different options, and one was $100,000.
Sure.
And he chose the $100,000 option.
So that was the highest.
They fainted. And he's like a scruffy old guy off the street, and lo and behold.
Well, never judge your potential donors by the way they look, the way they dress. Some things can be clues, but
so my beautiful home, and you don't really know.
But you got the major gift ask.
But some things are clues, but you got to take a total package too.
Yeah.
Don't just judge. He goes on a nice vacation, but look at the car he and his wife drive.
Yeah.
You know,
and so these little tiny questions you ask, it almost becomes not even an ask at one point, because you don't have to say, we were hoping you'd consider a gift of blah, blah, blah to accomplish blah, blah, blah. Sometimes you don't even have to do that, because this asking conversation is so organic. Would you like to know more about how you could support the project? Yeah, I would. Okay, well, here's some ideas. Which is the ones that you would like? Oh, I would like the scholarships. Tell me more about scholarships. And here's some other things you can do. You can say to the donor, when you make a gift to our organization, these kinds of things happen. It's the process of making a gift.
We have this kind of
recognition, and sometimes it takes a couple of weeks to get it approved because we have to sign an agreement if it's an endowment or a scholarship, and some donors choose to have a small recognition event and you get to meet the blah, blah, blah. And what you're doing, you're visualizing and helping the donor visualize. And it's not so mysterious.
Right.
If you're making a stock gift, this is how we walk it through, this is how we handle it. This is the time when the sale is made so that you do not charge any taxes on the appreciation. And so all of those things are perfectly permissible to talk about with your donor. And they make the gift more and more realistic. And then another thing you can do, this is all...
Okay, we only have about 30 seconds left. So okay. Can you get the other thing in 30 seconds?
30 seconds. You tell your donor what other people have done.
Oh, you're part of a community.
Yeah, and this donor gave this, and this donor gave that. How do you like that? Is that good?
Excellent.
Great.
We got to leave there.
Great.
All right.
Gail Perry.
You'll find
subtle steps.
You'll find, yes.
The subtle steps to the ask. Her book is A Fundraising Turned Board Passion into Action, and you'll find her at GailPerry.com and also at GailPerryNC.
And thank
you again so much for having me in your home.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Tony. It was so much fun.
Pleasure.
Goodbye to Facebook. Goodbye to Periscope.
Next week, I'm back in the studio with, as I've already said a couple times, Claire Meyerhoff. She's our creative producer, and she's got, as I said, Donor Story Secrets, creative producer to this very show. If you missed any part of today's show, I beseech you, find it on TonyMartinetti.com. We're sponsored by Pursuant, online tools for small and mid-sized nonprofits, data-driven and technology-enabled. And by We Be Spelling, super cool spelling bee fundraisers, WeBeeSpelling.com. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. She'll be on next week. Sam Leibowitz is the line producer up in the studio on West 72nd Street. Betty McCardle is our AM and FM outreach director. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez, and this cool music is by Scott Stein. I don't hear the cool music. With me next week for Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
What's not to love about Nonprofit Radio? Tony gets the best guests. Check this out from Seth Godin.
This is the first revolution since TV 1950 and Henry Ford 1920. It's the revolution of our lifetime.
Here's a smart, simple idea from Craigslist founder Craig Newmark.
Yeah, in sites or in presentation or anything, people don't really need the fancy stuff. They need something which is simple and fast.
When's the best time to post on Facebook? Facebook's Andrew Noyes knows.
At traffic is at an all-time high around 9 a.m. or 8 p.m. So that's when you should be posting your most meaningful posts.
Here's Aria Finger, COO of DoSomething.org.
Young people are not going to be involved in social change if it's boring and they don't see the impact of what they're doing. So you got to make it fun and applicable to these young people. Because otherwise, a 15 and 16-year-old, they have better things to do. They have Xbox, they have TV, they have their cell phones.
Ami Dar is the founder of Idealist.
It took 2 or 3 years for foundation staff to sort of deign to add an email address to their card.
Yes.
It was like, it was phone. This email thing is weird. And plus, why should I give it away?
Charles Best founded DonorsChoose.org.
Somehow they've gotten in touch, kind of offline, as it were.
Yeah.
And they'll do exchanges of brownies and visits and physical gift.
Mark Echo is the founder and CEO of Echo Enterprises. You may be wearing his hoodies and shirts. Tony talked to him.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big believer that it's not what you make in life. It's you know, it's how you make people feel.
This is public radio host Majora Carter.
Innovation is in the power of understanding that you don't just, you know, you just put money on a situation and expect it to heal. You put money on a situation and invest it and expect it to grow.
And savvy advice for success from Eric Saperstein.
What separates those who achieve from those who do not is in direct proportion to one's ability to ask others for help.
The smartest experts and leading thinkers are on Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%.